Board of Ed meeting. Today is February 16, 2017. Virginia, can we do roll call?
Mr. Compasto?
Here.
Mrs. Kobus?
Here.
Mrs. Palchuk?
Here.
Mr. Lean? Mr. McCluskey? Mrs. Nadel?
Here.
Mr. Sonnenfeld?
Okay, thank you, Virginia. Okay, first up is communications. Dennis, do you have an NSSEO report, please?
Yes, I do. I attended the meeting on February 1st. NSSEO recognized students from LIFE, L-Y-F-E. It's the Love Your Friends Equally Committee. They're from FREM School in District 211 and the SOS, which is Service Over Self, from Hersey, and they're in District 214. They volunteer their efforts to develop friendships while supporting the economic and social growth of students at Kirk and Minor School. The board ratified the NSSEA and the NSSEA ESP contracts, which was good and nice. And there were various routine matters that we all do at these board meetings. And then there was a presentation on the January Institute Day sessions. And I believe two or three employees from District 57 did attend the Institute Days. That's it.
Great, thank you. I know Jolene is not here tonight to get an Ed Foundation update. Eileen, do you want to say anything?
There's 146 people signed up. Looks like everything's going well. They have quite a few silent auction and live auction stuff, and everything's coming together.
You want to remind everyone the date?
Oh, it is 24th, 25th. Thank you. Saturday, February 25th. If you have not signed up, tomorrow is technically the deadline. But if you need, I know somebody. it's a good time. It's a fun time. And as my husband always says, it's for the kids.
Thank you. Ed Foundation.
That was it.
Sorry. Thank you. PTA reports or PTO. Does anyone have? I know Lincoln's next week.
I was sick for Fairview's.
Okay.
This week.
And that's it. So, okay, we'll move right along. Okay, board president report. I just have two items. One, the March 2nd was a tentative date and will probably be closed session only. So just to keep in mind, March 2nd upcoming Board of Ed meeting is tentative right now, but will be a closed session. And then second, as we know, the elections are coming up. So we tentatively had, we were thinking about April 27th as one of the dates to reorganize the board. However, we're not gonna be able to do that date. Joe has a conflict. So we're looking at either April 24th, April 25th, or May 1st. So if you guys could check your calendars, get back to Joe. Sure, it's April 24th, April 25th, and May 1st. And if you can just let Joe know your availability, that would be great.
Yeah, and the sole purpose would just be for reorganization. There won't be any other business.
Reorganization only, correct. Okay, great. Next is community comments. This is the first point. We have two options, or two times, I should say, when we will have community comments. This point in the meeting is an opportunity to express your comments. We welcome and appreciate anyone who would like to share their thoughts or concerns with the board. However, this is not a question and answer period. If you have questions for the board or administration, we ask that you take the time out to fill out a card that's in the back and provide us your contact information, or you can even submit it on our website, either way. Okay, is there any community comments? Anybody else besides that comment? Oh, someone's coming.
Good evening. My name is Jean Morris. I'm a special education teacher at Lincoln Middle School and co-president of the MPA, representing 158 certified staff members across four buildings. First, I would like to take a moment and thank the 10 teachers that are retiring this year. Their leadership and example will be deeply missed. We also recognize we are losing a principal and an assistant superintendent to retirement. While we set on the path to replace these 12 valued positions, along with at least three others, on the table tonight for approval is an additional 9.5 certified and 3 administrative positions. Based on these numbers right now, at 22.5 new teachers, 13% of the certified staff will be new next year. Given any additional staff members who move to other opportunities, we will likely have more than 15% new staff. At the same time, 50% of the administration in the school buildings will be new. MPEA respectfully urges the Board of Education to reflect on the hidden costs that each building will be assuming. To absorb and acclimate new staff, current staff must be prepared to guide and mentor in the areas of planning, curriculum, classroom management, differentiation, and technology. Additionally, returning staff will be essential to support students and families as they seek out familiar staff while learning to work with the new faces in our schools. Research proves that the student-teacher relationship is key to student success. Approval of today's staffing plan assumes that in addition to the major initiatives already planned, such as piloting curriculum and social studies, moving the SOAR program to Lyons Park, expansion of the one-to-one initiative, implementing the second year of the evaluation and SLO process, and adding mobiles to Westbrook, the district is taking on significant changes in the role of the psychologist shared across the schools, a change in the evaluators at three schools, the elimination of RTI specialists at the middle school, and the overall change in the schedule at Lincoln. Recognizing that it is an immense responsibility to run a student-centered district, we compel you to prioritize the needs and delay the additional staff at the middle school as we absorb the meaningful overall staffing additions. The quality professionals that work in our classrooms today must be prioritized and supported with competitive compensation and respectful working conditions. MPEA implores the Board of Education and District 57 Administration to strategize on how to best meet our students' needs while being fiscally responsible and prioritizing the opportunities for change that lay in front of us. Please take the time today to make judicious decisions related to the staffing plan and the district initiatives. Your decision-making criteria must offer our students clear opportunities and an environment conducive to growth. Give us time to develop as a new staff and later challenge us to meet additional curricular requirements. Ask yourself, when does the amount of change become too much to absorb?
Thank you. Is there any other additional comments?
Good evening. My name is Patricia Craven, and I am a resident of Mount Prospect. I am also a District 57 teacher at Lincoln Middle School. Even though I'm a teacher, I am here as a concerned citizen and an advocate for our children. I know I share your passion for all of our children. I deeply appreciate the time, talent, and energy that the board spends on our children's behalf. With that being said, I'm concerned about the possible change to our schedule to accommodate additional math minutes. Now, additional math minutes certainly benefit our children, but I'm concerned about the cost to the rest of our children's education. When Mr. Siminski spoke 2 weeks ago, I was very disappointed by the lack of questions. It was very clear that when the schedule is changed to accommodate more math minutes, it meant a reduction of 14 days of learning for our students in foreign language, social studies, art, music, and broad experience during one calendar year. If you consider the education of a sixth grade student as he or she progresses through Lincoln, you would also have to multiply that 14 days by 3 years. That comes out to 8.4 weeks. For all intents and purposes, that is equal to one quarter. I don't think that eliminating one quarter of Spanish, French, social studies, art, or music makes fiscal sense. We are also supposed to be encouraging more STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. Again, do we want our students to leave us with one less quarter of science, computers, or GTT Gateway? We have just shortchanged our students one quarter in three of the four letters of the STEM acronym. I believe it is STEM, not STEMA. What happened to preparing our children to learn and succeed in a changing world? Please consider the high price our children will pay if we change our school schedule so drastically. Their futures depend on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments right now? We will have a second time. Okay, with that, we'll move to staff reports. First up is Student Discipline and Behavioral Interventions Committee report.
Good evening. Tonight, I'd like to share with you the work that we've been doing in relation to how we address disciplinary issues within our schools. First, I'll share with you a little background on the changes in the law that have prompted this work and what this means for our district. Our committee has also worked to clarify the in-document behavioral supports for students with IEPs, and we'll discuss this as well. As I mentioned, we formed a committee that has been working on this year, as this is required under board policy. The committee is comprised of a variety of staff members from each school that include administrators, social workers, psychologists, teachers, and parent representatives. We actually have a couple committee members with us here tonight, and I would ask them to briefly stand up for recognition. Thank you. I really do want to thank our committee because they've worked really hard, as you can see from the work that's in front of you, to really create a comprehensive code of conduct that highlights both best practices and legal requirements. And this work really started from looking at the law, the changes, the nationwide and statewide data suggesting the need for change. And then we utilized a model code of conduct developed by the Transforming School Discipline Collaborative and tweaked it to fit our district. And then we also modeled our behavioral intervention procedures for students with IEPs off of work from surrounding districts as well. And then both of these documents have been vetted by our attorney as well. So Senate Bill 100, or SB 100 as it's often called, went into effect on September 15th of this school year. The bill was really in response to both nation and statewide data that suggested a need for discipline reform. For instance, the data suggested significant disparities in exclusionary discipline for specific groups of students, such as students of color and students with disabilities. Data also suggests a high reliance on exclusionary discipline, such as suspensions, expulsions, and transfer to alternative settings for relatively minor violations, such as dress code violations or tardies. Additionally, the data highlighted negative outcomes for students when exclusionary practices are used. For instance, use of exclusionary discipline correlates with a decrease in academic achievement, an increase in substance abuse involvement with the juvenile justice system, and ironically, these practices are also associated with an increase in behavior. Lastly, and probably most concerning, suspension is a significant predictor of dropping out of high school. Being suspended just once in ninth grade is correlated with a twofold increase in dropping out of school from 16% to 32%. And it is with this in mind that the law really recognizes that school exclusions are the most serious discipline interventions and consequences, and that school officials should limit the number and duration of suspensions and expulsions to the greatest extent practicable. The law also recommended that exclusionary discipline is only used for legitimate educational purposes, and that non-exclusionary discipline is considered before suspension and expulsions in order to avoid school removal that's unnecessary. Lastly, the law also focuses on eliminating zero tolerance policies unless it's mandated by federal law. And decisions really need to be made on a case-by-case basis, looking at each individual circumstance. Under the law, they really look at suspensions, and for suspensions of 3 days or less, students would only be allowed to be suspended if they posed a threat to school safety or a disruption to others' learning environments. Schools are able to utilize suspensions more than 3 days, expulsions, or removal to an alternative school if they have also demonstrated that appropriate and available discipline and behavioral interventions have been exhausted and that students pose a threat or substantially disrupt or impede the learning environment of others. For suspensions more than 4 days, a school must provide appropriate and available support services. If a student is expelled, a school can provide appropriate and available services. And then a couple other requirements are that we have a re-engagement policy to facilitate a successful transition when students come back to school after a suspension or expulsion. Districts also must create a policy allowing students to make up any academic work during the time that they are out for exclusionary discipline. Another big area of focus is providing professional development on effective behavioral management to all parties who may be involved with working with students with behavioral needs. While this has already been an area of focus for us, we've continued to increase our focus this year. So for example, in our April Institute Day, we'll have at least 4 sessions specifically addressing behavior. So what does this mean for our district? The law really hasn't significantly changed our practices. We rarely utilize exclusionary discipline and have always focused on discipline as a way to help students learn more appropriate behaviors. However, this has been an opportunity for us to review our practices as well as document our practices to communicate to all stakeholders. Additionally, it allowed us to really focus on highlighting some of the proactive things that we do because we know that that really is the most effective way to address behavior in a school setting. Probably though, the most significant change for us is that we'd like to begin learning about and incorporating a restorative justice approach to responding to disciplinary concerns. So restorative justice is a framework that really sees relationships as central to learning and important for a healthy school climate for students and staff. And the focus really is on repairing harm done to relationships and people over and above the need for assigning blame and dispensing punishment. So this chart outlines a little bit the differences between a more traditional punitive approach and then a restorative approach. So with a punitive approach, we focus on misbehavior as breaking the rules, whereas in a restorative approach, it's a violation of people and relationships. With a more punitive approach, the student is accountable really only to school authorities, and that accountability is equated with punishment, whereas in a restorative framework, the student is accountable to those that are harmed and the school community, and the accountability really is defined as taking responsibility and repairing that harm. This is something that has become extremely popular, and our district is really excited to learn more about this. We have a restorative justice trainer that is going to come in and do a training for us in March, and our administrators, social workers, psychologists, and committee members will be a part of that training, and then some of those staff members will then provide a training for our staff at the April Institute Day as well. And these are just some of the first steps that we'll take to begin to incorporate more of a restorative approach to discipline. Under school code, districts are also required to outline the ways in which we utilize behavioral interventions for students with disabilities. ISBE provided guidance documents several years ago that really outlined kind of levels of interventions and possible appropriate intervention strategies with a focus on positive behavioral supports, which is aligned with both Senate Bill 100 as well as some of our practices already. And we utilized existing procedures from several other districts to develop our plans that are then in line with those guidance documents. And this is something that you can see in your packet as well. Our committee will plan to meet yearly to review our procedures and policies and make sure that they continue to reflect best practices and legal requirements, and make sure that we continue to address any areas that we need to appropriately support behaviors. I think one of our next steps is that we'll develop a memorandum of understanding with the police department. That's something that was recommended for us to do in terms of helping to ensure that we're all kind of working together to address behavioral concerns that might happen in or outside of a school district. We'll also try and continue to develop frameworks so that we're consistent in making case-by-case decisions regarding discipline. So we're really excited about the work that we've done, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Great, thank you. Thank you for the presentation and for the update. Questions?
Go ahead, please. I have a few general questions.
Sure.
One, you talked about one of the standards being appropriate and available support services.
Mm-hmm.
What actually is appropriate and available?
So the law doesn't define that. That's really up to the districts, and so that's something that each district has to decide. So when we look at that, some of the things that we've listed in the code of conduct that might be available are things like access to, you know, if a student is out of school, access to online textbooks and materials, or computer-based learning programs. It might be referrals to outside agencies. There's a variety of different things, but it's not specifically defined within the law.
One additional question. I noticed that there's three levels of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a general concern about the first one listed in level one and level three.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about rough play, and it sort of categorizes it as, you know, running around and pushing each other and piggyback rides and
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. And then in three, it goes to physical aggression and physical contact between two people with intent to harm.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that is a large gap to put that rough play, and, you know, rough play can easily move to more aggressive,
mm-hmm.
especially with boys. And now you're putting them from a category one to a category three. I think there should be another category in two that defines a transition period
mm-hmm.
between that. I think there's no question that if, you know, somebody comes to school with the intent mm-hmm. of harming another student, that should be a category three. But to say physical contact between two with the intent, I think at any point, if there's rough play, there can be really some intent. You're not saying you want to hurt somebody, but there's an intent to create a situation where there's conflict. And you're putting that person right from, you know, going from that roughhousing mm-hmm. to now all of a sudden being in the third category, which I think is a little severe, especially with, you know, things going on at lunchtime and that. I have no question if there's an intent from
mm-hmm.
a plan to harm somebody. That's a different story. But I think there should be a transition period or something that puts it into category two and not just drop some kind of aggressive play
sure.
to category three.
And I think how we tried to address that is with all of these behaviors, this is a guide. And so it's not something that there is some discretion in looking at case by case. Also, we do have that with level two behaviors, those really are repeated or intensified level one behaviors, so that might also be something that would be a more intensified version of rough play would qualify as a level two behavior as well. So that was kind of the way that we had intended that.
My general concern, and I understand, is putting that aggressive play or aggressiveness in that third category, and then another category with, you know, weapons violations, and
mm-hmm.
It seems to me a little. I mean, I guess I'm from a different time when, you know, boys would be on the playground and they might get into a scuffle, and so I think putting it in that category with bullying And with weapons violations and substance abuse violations, I think is a little aggressive, but that's just my opinion.
But it's a case by case.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is not necessarily might meet the level of the bullying or, you know, possession of a weapon. I mean, the consequence, I would think, would be less severe. You know what I'm saying?
There was a transition, though, but there really isn't. In three, there's not. In two, there's no transition. It talks about the rough play, and then it goes, and there's no.
But there's no set consequence, though, either. Like saying, if you do this level three, your set consequence is this. So if it's case by case, then your set consequence might actually be still in the level two stage for your intervention or consequence versus.
Right.
You know, it's not like you're suspended for fighting. Am I right? It's
right. So, I mean, I think there's a couple things that, you know, you mentioned that we would look at every situation on a case-by-case basis. But the other thing is our goal is not to use exclusionary discipline or to use that really as a last resort. And so that's something that, you know, we really would be looking at what else could we do. That is going to keep students within a school environment before looking at excluding them as well. And so it's intended to be a guide that gives some structure and gives people an idea of what are some of the behaviors and potential consequences, but none of them are so set in stone that we would make decisions without looking at the whole picture.
One thing I would just like to point out to the board is you may recall that whenever there was an out-of-school suspension, it had to be you had to be notified by law. I had to let you know, and I always put it in your board memo. You haven't seen those. It's been almost 2 years since we've used that form of consequence.
Because there has been none, or we just don't communicate that?
There have been.
Okay, that's great. Okay. I was like trying them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, wonderful. But, and Jerry, I know you had a question. I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, Cassie, but I think, so level two would be if it's a repeated offense
mm-hmm.
or if the behavior intensified.
Mm-hmm.
So Dennis, to that rough play, you know, if you're constantly having, you know, being a repeat offender or that, or it seems to intensify, but maybe not at a fight situation, then that would fall in level two. So I think that's kind of where that gray wiggle room is. But
Well, I just think that, I don't
that's
know.
How I
mean, I think it's not, you know, shouldn't be fighting, but I think aggressive physical play amongst boys with the intent to maybe, what is, you know, when you play football, really there's an intent to harm, you know, you're hitting somebody with the intent to harm somebody or to stop them or to do whatever. I mean, it's not an outright intentional thing, but the way that the definition is placed in level three, it says physical contact between two people with the intent to harm. I think that's fairly broad, and to put that in the same category with some of these other items, I think is a concern. And if a parent has a child who may be hurt in a altercation between two boys, could point to this and say, I want that student, you know, because here's what the definition is, and my son was hurt. And not that, you know, we condone anybody getting hurt, but I think to put it in that category three gives an argument to one of the sides, the student or the parent, to want the discipline or to request the discipline that's in that level three. And I can see the level one activity and rough play easily turning to the level three physical aggression, and now all of a sudden you're putting that student, you're labeling, even though I understand there is a process of evaluating these situations and there's some flexibility, it still is what the document says, and parties can point to it and say, well, this is what happened, and I think now that's that should be a level three, and then when you're backing out saying, I mean, because the definition is fairly broad, and you could put a lot of situations into that definition. Mm. So I just wanted to voice my opinion about that, and I can understand that you can't really put everything in this document that may take place. But I of all the other activities, there isn't like a progression. In this one, there is, and the progression goes from level one, and there's nothing about the activity in two, and then it goes right to three. Mm-hmm. So from that rough play to aggressiveness, and now it's a level three behavior, I just find that a little difficult to understand, given how broad that definition is.
Okay. Jerry, you had a question?
Yeah, actually part of mine was actually along the lines of Elaine's comment, because my thought was, as you went through this process, just from the feedback of talking to my kids and their friends over time, it seems like the district is very supportive of kids when it comes to discipline. Mm-hmm. And as you went through this process, I assume you guys were reflected on maybe things that have happened over time, and I think that fits right into what Elaine said, that in the last 2 years, there haven't been suspensions, but is that, in terms of implementing the new policies, I guess, was there a feeling that we were already on a spectrum that leaned more this way?
Yeah, you know, I think for us, the change in law really didn't impact a lot of what we do, because I think we already embraced the philosophy that's kind of behind the law, and so our discipline has always been focused on teaching appropriate behaviors, and you know, like Dr. Allmiller said, we really rarely use exclusionary discipline, and so it wasn't something that was in any way a drastic change, but I think it was helpful in that it allowed us to actually really look at our practices, and we focused more on what do we do proactively, because that really is what we think is kind of the best way to support behaviors, and so looking at what are our systems in place for that and what can we do to continue to enhance that.
Karen?
So I was just wondering, with the new process, staff is being educated and administrators, is there anything that needs to be done to get this out to students or communicate it out to parents? And like we were saying, it seems like what we've been doing, but mm-hmm. is there any plans for that?
Well, so the code of conduct would actually be something that would be communicated to families, and so right now some of the behavioral information is in the handbook. And so we would actually kind of replace that information with this information, because it's I think even more comprehensive in terms of how we support behavior.
Okay. Eileen, no? Do you have a timeline for updating that document then?
That would occur during registration
okay.
process.
So great.
Forthcoming.
Great. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Thank you for the committee who is here tonight as well. Thank you. Okay, next is superintendent's report.
I do not have a report this evening.
Oh, okay. Moving on. Thank you. Consent agenda. Okay. We have seven items here, and some of them we're going to have to pull out. First item is minutes of the following Board of Ed meeting, regular business meeting January 19th. Eileen, I believe you missed that meeting. It was open and closed sessions. The second one is regular business meeting February 2nd, open and closed session. I missed that one, so we'll have to call those two separately. Then we have personnel transactions, approve the first year leave of absence of one certified employee. We have approved the appointment of three ESP individuals, approve the termination of one ESP employee. Then we have the financial reports for January of 2017, in which Dennis reviewed them. Dennis, are they good?
All good.
Thank you. Number four, accounts payable bills, which is part of that. Number five, to approve the attorney, architect, and construction manager. Number six, approve 2017-2018 preliminary staffing plan. And number seven, and the final one under consent agenda, is approve salary increase for year 18 for the educational support staff excluded from the MPESPA bargaining unit. Is there any of those besides the business meetings that need to be pulled? Any of the?
Karen? Number six, please.
Number six, okay.
So I guess I'll go first. I'll read the first one. Sure. Okay. So first off, minutes of the following Board of Education meeting, regular business meeting, January 19th, 2017, open and closed session. Virginia?
I move to approve.
Second.
Thank you.
Mr. Compasto?
Yes.
Mrs. Kobus?
Yes.
Mrs. Kowalczyk?
Abstain.
Mr. McCluskey?
Yes.
Mrs. Nadel?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Second, I move to motion regular business meeting February 2nd, 2017, open and closed session.
Second.
I can't.
You can't make the motion.
Darn it, sorry.
Dennis can make
so it. Moved.
I'll second.
I know I have to.
Mrs. Kowalczyk?
Yes.
Mr. McCluskey?
Yes.
Mrs. Nadel?
Yes.
Yes.
Mrs. Kobus.
Abstain. Can I move to the rest? Okay, then I'll shut up. Okay, can I have a motion for number 2, 3, 4, 5, and 7?
Motion I move to approve items number 2, 3, 4, 5, and 7.
Yes.
Mrs. Nadel?
Yes.
Mr. Compasto?
Yes.
Mrs. Kobus?
Yes. Okay, finally, we have to pull the approved 2017-2018 preliminary staffing plan. Karen?
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate kind of what I said at the last meeting and see if there was any other discussion on it. I see a lot of value in investing in our students, but I'm just really concerned about the money piece, the change piece. No pun on that. But the change in movement and planning for the students, particularly with the impending potential referendum a year from now. You know, March 17th, 2011, we talk about it like, you know, it was just yesterday, and it was really a very difficult meeting when we lost 25% of our certified staff. I won't be here anymore, I'm not running, but I do not want anyone sitting around this table to have to go through something like that again. I have deep concern about having to change if a referendum does not pass, or having us hit that 30% line even quicker. So I just wanted to share my thoughts with that, and that's it.
Okay, thank you, Karen. Any other questions or comments on this item?
I do agree with Karen. I do think, though, I think the at least in my opinion, the question is, we've been talking about getting this going, and I think we have to do it. I think if the referendum does not pass, there's going to be a consequence. It may be a little worse if we move forward with expanding the math minutes and hiring the additional staff, but that's just going to be a small impact on the whole situation. I think we're going to have to deal with the situation, and there's going to be cuts. There may be a few more cuts with that situation. It may be reverting it to where it is now, but I think we have to at least put it forward and start it. We've been talking about it for years, and it's going to be up to the community to decide what they want to do.
Anyone else?
I also agree with Dennis. I mean, we've been trying to do this for years in different processes of doing block scheduling and now this scheduling, and I think we need to make that step forward also to add these additional math minutes, I mean, it's for their education and learning and making it a better one for them. I personally think, with these extra math minutes. I think we should move on and move forward with it.
I would like to also add that I know the MPEA has a concern, and I have the same concern that they have. But I think as every one of the experts has come up and talked about this, I think one of us has asked the question, is it better to have expanded math minutes? And without exception, everyone has said yes. In fact, the I think it was Patricia who was up here, her second sentence was, there's no doubt, or she said that math minutes will be beneficial to the children. It's not so many words, I'm not gonna paraphrasing, but that was one of her first statements that she made. So I think everybody has to acknowledge that it's important. I know it does have an impact on MPA, but I think we have to move forward. We've been talking about it, and I don't think there's any question it's the best thing for the students. Now we have to figure out how it's gonna fit in, and then I think it would be up to the community to decide if it's gonna stay in place or not.
Julie?
So I'm in agreement with Dennis's point of view. I understand the situation that we're in, but to put it off at this point, if it's something that we've been looking at for quite a while, it's the right thing to do for the kids, and you know we'll deal with the repercussions if we don't see the support in the referendum next year.
So I'll just be clear that I'm not saying no to this because I don't believe in what's best for the kids.
No, that I didn't definitely intend that. Sorry.
So
I
just want it to be known that I do want the education of the students to be first and foremost. But as stewards of the community, the seven of us are elected to be stewards of the taxpayers' money. Of course, I have no students in District 57, but I care deeply about it. I want what's best for the students, but I also want what's best for the taxpayers of the community. And I feel like, although this is a good move, this is not the right time. And I know we've been putting this off for years, but I'm just so hesitant on this, and those are my words. That's my final answer.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for all of your feedback. You know, my personal opinion, you know, we have been talking about this since I've been on the board now for the last few years. I know that we've also, every year, we get an update on the students and their scoring. And if I remember correctly, I don't have it in front of me, but we've always kind of questioned some of, although we're still at a top tier level, there seems to always be that dip with math, specifically in the middle school years. And I know we've had conversations of, is that a reflection of the math minutes that are currently being done compared to other communities? And so in my mind, I feel like this would really benefit the Lincoln students, as well as really help them achieve what their goals when they move on to the high school years. I just think it's very critical. So, you know, I agree with everything everyone had to say, but I definitely would like to move forward with the proposal for the preliminary staffing plan, because including the four FTEs for the math. So that's kind of where I stand. Okay, can I have someone make a motion on consent agenda? Item number 6, which is approved 2017-2018 preliminary staffing plan.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. McCluskey?
Yes.
Mrs. Nadel?
No.
Mr. Compasto?
Yes.
Mrs. Kovas?
Yes.
Mrs. Kowalczyk?
Yes.
A quick question, Elaine. What's the process and the procedure? And that this is just preliminary, but what's the next stages and the estimated time or when we would discuss or approve that next stage?
Well, the next action by the board on the staffing plan is when you approve the budget in September. We will move forward starting tomorrow with posting of vacancies based on the staffing plan that you just approved. we won't have all of these positions filled by the end of the school year, but we'll have many of them filled. Then, of course, over the summer, if there's any changes, you know, opening the section. I tried to build into the staffing plan sort of the worst case scenario for staffing. It doesn't mean we are going to fill all those positions. So, for example, I've put in two additional first grade sections at Westbrook, but that's contingent on whether or not we get our typical influx from kindergarten to first grade. It could be with this high kindergarten enrollment this year that we've already got most of them, so we wouldn't have to go to 11 sections, which is what we're planning for. We would only have to go to 10 sections. So there's a staffing FTE that would not be filled. And so in August is when I will give the board an update on where we stand with the staffing plan.
Can I make a request that an item be added for the next regular meetings, the next few months, that there's a update on the sort of where we are, just so, because my approval was based on the fact that I thought this was like preliminary and that it's actually not finalized until we get to that budget stage. And so I'd like to know sort of where, if anything's changing at any point, that we're made aware of that.
I'm happy to do that. There really won't be anything to update until we get through the registration process, and that will start May 1st, and that'll go for 6 weeks. So the June business meeting would really be the next time that I would be able to tell you. Now, between now and then, we will be going through the interviewing process, and we'll have recommendations for hire. So at those times, I can let you know what's being filled, where we're at sort of informally.
Perfect.
Okay?
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Next up is unfinished business. Do we have any? No. Okay. Community comments. This is the second time to make community comments. Yes, sir.
Lewis Goodman. I'm a resident of District 57. I hate to keep asking this, but I know you said about the people making comments and writing them down, putting them on a card and so forth. And I guess that's the way it's always going to be with this District 57 board. However, I would like to say that sometimes you might get a little information from the citizens of the district as well as the board members. Now, I'm not saying that everybody's got as much education as any one of you folks, but sometimes even somebody that doesn't have as much education or years of education that you might have some ideas that might work better or with something that you might want to listen to and think about. If you want to get people in the community involved, I think that might help. I don't see a lot of people here at the meetings. Granted, I don't. And I talk to a lot of people in this town, in our district, and I said, well, why don't you come to the meetings? Well, they don't do anything. All they do is yak to each other, and nothing gets done. Is that the attitude we want to have in our district? Now, they will show up, and they may come here when there's a referendum or there's something that went wrong in the district. They probably come then. But I think that it might be worthwhile to think about that. Whether you approve it or not, I don't know. But I just hope that someday, before I leave this earth, that maybe the District 57 will let the citizens ask questions, and maybe it would work out for the citizens at that time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there any other community comments? Okay, before we move to new business, I do just want to state that the district board started 2 years ago, community conversations, would that be correct? Community forums, three years. So this is our third year, and we haven't published a date. That's actually one of the comments that's going to be coming up in a second. But we try to host two events a year. And it's at the public library, so it's at Mount Prospect Public Library. It lasts no more than an hour.
We serve coffee and cookies or something like that. And we will talk each time. It's about a different topic. And one time was financial. One time was about the aging of our buildings. Another time was about classroom size. And it is very, we break out in groups. It's very conversational. We're there to talk to anybody that wants to talk to us as long as they want. I mean, we'd stay there to 10 o'clock, if 11 o'clock, doesn't matter. So please get that word out. Because we try to publicize it, market it. We definitely want to hear all community members. So I appreciate your comments, and we are trying to get there. Okay, thank you. New business.
We have none.
None? Okay, great. So board discussion. So speaking of our community comments, so Joe has asked me to on board discussions to talk about the spring community forum topic and date. I missed the last meeting, unfortunately, and I think this came up. He mentioned to you guys about kind of brainstorming a little bit, thinking about topics. Has anyone thought anything more about our upcoming spring forum and what the topic would be on? Or
I think we had a proposal, but Joe, I believe, has an idea that he think might be better suited for our meeting in the spring.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly. I want to paraphrase what he said. I don't remember exactly what the topic is. I think maybe
he wanted to discuss, you know, what we were doing with math minutes and to get, you know, feedback from the community along those lines to see what we want to bring forward to the district, and with the referendum, this is how we want to continue on. Education-wise, curriculum-wise.
Well, yeah, I remember something now you said referendum. Dennis, were you going to check with someone speaking?
Joe communicated with Joe sometime thereafter, and he had some direct contact with the community,
uh-huh.
And he thought that this idea regarding explaining the situation with math minutes, getting feedback and input on that would probably be better suited for that this time. So I made a preliminary contact with the assessor's office,
mm-hmm, that's it, yeah.
But then I put it on hold until there was a decision by the board as to what they wanted to do.
If the board did want to move forward with the Lincoln Math Minutes as the topic, in your board packet memo, we listed some dates, possible dates forthcoming with that. Monday, February 27th, Monday, March 6th, Tuesday, March 7th, or Monday, March 13th. We would host it at Lincoln, and Paul Siminski would be available that evening to help do the presentation for the people in attendance. So we can get that booked if that's where the board wants to go with it.
I mean, I think both topics are great. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's timely to talk about, you know, potential changes in curriculum, and you know, it kind of rolls into the finance piece of it and how we're servicing our students, and mm-hmm. You know, a lot of discussion on that. And I was gonna suggest, you know, that week of March 6th or 7th, because we do not have a board meeting that week, and so try and even it out for us.
What were the dates again? You said it was in the packet.
It's in the packet under the board discussion.
I have it
item.
For Tuesday the 14th.
Yeah.
Tuesday the 14th.
Tuesday, March 14th.
Yeah.
Tuesday the 14th. Oh, okay.
So if we could do the 16th or the 6th or the 7th. Yeah. Because March 16th will also have a board meeting.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Do you guys?
Either of those dates works, but I think the you know, after I heard about the suggestion of the math minutes, I think it is a very timely topic, and given that we just gave the preliminary approval on the headcount,
mm-hmm.
I think it would provide valuable insights that if there's a feeling that we need to look at something or make a modification or put things on hold, that it would be good to get that feedback before all the hiring's complete or all the plans are completely in place. So I think from a timeliness standpoint, that would be a good topic for the forum, assuming we get good attendance.
Well, I'm assuming probably most of Lincoln will be, those parents will probably be.
Although I think it would, you know, fifth grade parents, I think it, you know, would be good for anybody to listen to, because eventually their student will be there.
Mm-hmm. Right, no, for sure.
And it's important to know kind of what your, what the middle school looks like.
Okay, so it seems like, unless there's any concern, seems like that will be the topic. I guess my only input is I would, you know, my thought would be, what the goal would be to be informative, you know, a lot of what was shared with us about what the new schedule looked like. I mean, as Jerry stated, we have voted on this. You know, I value input, but as I have, maybe I haven't stated before, I only said it to Joe, but, you know, we look to administration to guide and to determine us, to determine the path from our educational needs. So, you know, as long as we're providing information, great. That's what makes me feel comfortable. So that's just my two cents. So anything else?
Did we pick a date?
I think we were saying March 6th or 7th. Is that right?
Either one's fine.
Either one's fine. So whatever works.
Either one.
Yeah.
Either one's good for me.
Either one of those works for you?
Monday or Tuesday?
Yes, at 7 o'clock?
Yeah. To both? Yeah, to both. Okay.
I'm going to be driving a little faster on that.
I'll check with Joe and Joe tomorrow.
Okay.
And then email you which date we're going to go with.
Great. Okay.
Can you have Jenny Quinn get out a save the date then right away?
I'll be in touch with her tomorrow.
Be here before we know it.
Yeah, that's very true. It's crazy. We're almost in March.
I'd just like to add one more thing. I will be talking about the schedule, but again, reiterating what Jen said, it is an opportunity for the community to come and ask us other questions besides politics, religion, and marriage advice. But other than those three things, we can discuss any of the other issues, and it's an opportunity. At that point, we can give a back and forth, I think. So,
yeah.
And as Jen said, we'll stay there until the questions stop. So.
Very true. Thank you. Okay, so we do have closed session. Closed session is for the purpose of the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees. Board action may or may not take place following closed session. Do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
Mrs. Needle?
Yes.
Mr. Compasto?
Yes.
Mrs. Palchuk?
Yes.
Mr. McCluskey?
Yes.
Mrs. Kobus?
Yes.
We'll meet over.
Okay, meeting adjourned. Thank you.